This is a podcast from Just World Educational, a talented team headquartered in Charlottesville, Virginia, that is educating for a just and peaceful world. Our website is at www.justworldeducational.org. I'm Helena Cobbin, the president of Just World Educational. As I noted in the last episode of this podcast, a few weeks ago I had the pleasure and privilege of attending a reunion in Chicago of some 40 Iraqi students who had been brought to colleges here in the United States by an organization called the Iraqi Student Project, ISP. ISP was founded in Damascus, Syria in 2006 by the American peace activists Gabe Huck and Teresa Kubasek, who ran it as a year-long study program to prepare some of the highly motivated young Iraqis then living as refugees in Syria, for admission to colleges here in the United States. Between 2008 and 2012, Gabe and Teresa brought more than 60 Iraqi students to U.S. colleges, and when I went to their reunion in Chicago in May, the last cohort of them had just graduated from their colleges here. In the last episode of this podcast, you heard ISP graduate Taif Jani talking about the work he's done to bring some joy as well as some relief to the very numerous new generations of displaced Iraqis and Syrians, that is, families displaced from the areas of northern Syria and Iraq, that in 2013 and 2014 came under the control of ISIS. In this episode, you'll hear from another very inspiring ISP graduate, who has spent even longer than Taif doing work to provide direct relief to these new Iraqi refugees. This is Dr. Sarah Ahmed, who at a very young age is now the Director of Operations for a UK-based charity called the Foundation for Relief and Reconciliation in the Middle East. FRRME is closely connected with the Anglican Church, and it runs crucial programs in parts of the Middle East where Britain was once powerful, especially Iraq, where it runs a hospital and a school in Baghdad, and a significant relief program in the Kurdish areas of northern Iraq that over the past 2 years have received and welcomed large numbers of displaced people and refugees who've been fleeing the areas where ISIS has established its large base of control. That flow of refugees still continues. Dr. Sarah is a thoughtful and energetic young woman, just under 30 years old, who is in charge of running all these operations on behalf of the Foundation. If you want to learn more about her work on the front lines of providing aid to families and whole communities displaced by ISIS, one good way is to follow her account on Instagram, where her name is Sarah A.K. Ahmed, that's Ahmed, A-H-M-E-D. From the photos and captions that she posts there, or from FRRME's own website, FRRME.org, you can get a rich idea of the many challenges she and her teams face in their work on an almost daily basis. Dr. Sarah has an engaging smile and a hijab-type scarf loosely wrapped over her hair. When we sat down in Chicago in May, she talked with real enthusiasm about her experience with the ISP tutoring program that Gabe and Teresa ran in Damascus, and about how it had really sharpened her abilities in critical thinking and writing in English, which of course for her was a second language. She then won a full scholarship to the University of Rochester, and ISP put her in touch with a local peace activist there who acted as a surrogate aunt or elder sister for her, helping her to adjust to life in this very foreign country. But soon enough, she decided to return home, to pursue the passion she had long held to help other people. And goodness only knows, there were so many urgent needs to be met in Iraq, 10 years into the wave of terrible conflicts that have racked the country ever since the US and its allies decided to invade it back in 2003. I am very happy to share with you this short interview I conducted with Dr. Sarah. In it, she talks with passion and conviction, not only about the work she's been doing, with some of the deeply traumatized survivors of ISIS's torments, but also about how she thinks people and governments around the world should respond to the challenge that ISIS poses. As a committed pacifist, she is strongly opposed to any idea that bombing or any other military operations can improve the situation of the many Iraqis whose plight she knows only too well. As all the talk continues in the Western countries and elsewhere about using military violence to try to defeat ISIS, Dr. Sarah's voice and analysis both definitely need to be heard. I am very pleased to bring them to you. So here we were, talking at a conference hotel in Chicago in late May of this year. You have also talked about having a passion of your own from a young age to help other people. And that's what you ended up doing. I mean, and now at an amazingly young age, you're running this whole operation for the Foundation for Relief and Reconciliation. Could you tell me just a little bit about what the Foundation is doing in the Middle East and in which areas? And then I'll ask you a couple more details later.
Of course. So the Foundation, as the name entails, we have two pillars of our work. We have reconciliation and relief. Reconciliation, we focus on religious reconciliation. So what we do is that we try to build a more to create harmony between all the religious leadership, because the founder of my foundation is actually a priest. He's an Anglican priest. His name is Canon Dwight, and he's very religious. So atmosphere triggered our passion toward religious reconciliation. Always thinking that if religion is part of the problem, religion has to be part of the solution. And the other part of our work...
So which countries are you working in?
Oh, so we work in Iraq, mm-hmm. Jordan, Jerusalem, mm-hmm. Israel, and a little bit of work in Turkey and Lebanon. So the main bases are Iraq, mm-hmm. and now we created a base in Jordan, Amman, and we have a school and associated partners in Jerusalem, Bethlehem, in Palestine, and in mm-hmm. Israel as well. In Lebanon, Turkey, not yet. And those are the biggest operation base. And of course, because of the current situation and the intensity of the crisis in Iraq, Iraq is our biggest base and our biggest operation.
So you... As I understand, you're managing offices both in Baghdad and in Erbil in the Kurdish region in the north.
Yeah, we still have work in the northern Iraq and the southern Iraq, and in Baghdad, because it was, you know, Anglican, the Anglican priest is the founder and the president. In Baghdad, when he started 15 years ago, mm-hmm. and he rebuilt or reopened the Anglican Church in Baghdad, mm-hmm. and around it, the foundation built a school, a medical center, a guest house, our center for our work, for reconciliation and for relief. And the clinic is fully... You know, it's a free clinic, free of charge, so mm-hmm. it's provide medical, the best medical care, and dental as well. And they have a lot of units, medical units, diversity of medic, you know, and lab and pharmacy, and we have a relief program. We do some help with some of the kids who need to finish their mm-hmm. education, different kind of relief here and there. And also in Erbil, because it's, I wouldn't say the center of the crisis, but it's the kind of the capital of the north, I would say. So it's very good to be in Erbil itself, mm-hmm. but the work is scattered among the Kurdistan area. So Duhok, Suleimani, Erbil, Kirkuk, it depends when mm-hmm. where the camp that are near.
And of course, that's near the crisis with ISIS.
Definitely, it's on
so
the border.
So I assume that really concerns you a lot, dealing with the humanitarian disaster.
it is very, it's very scary sometimes, the closeness. Especially, like, for example, there's this camp called Debaka camp in Mahmur, and it's a very close line. It's like, I would say close, but it's like 30 to 35 kilometer away from ISIS. Now, it was closer, but I mean, now it's like 30 kilometer away. But it's the closest line that we have to ISIS. Mm-hmm. So any movement, any displacement that happens, the first crowd that comes, it comes to Mahmur and Debaga.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if I'm in Debaga and Mahmur, in Debaga camp in Mahmur, and things happen between ISIS and the army, and we are hearing that people are coming. People start coming, mobilizing toward us. All the agencies would leave. Because it's very scary, mm-hmm. you know? Okay, we have to leave because it's iffy now. People still come, but all the agencies would leave, except, of course, the management of the camp, which is the BCF, the Barzani Charity Foundation. You know,
it's which?
The BCF, mm-hmm. which is the Barzani Charity Foundation.
Okay.
Most of the camps are managed by this BCF.
So that's a private or a
it's
Kurdish
a local,
government?
It's a Kurdish, it's a local charity in mm-hmm. Kurdistan. It's very active.
Mm-hmm. So they manage the internal
camps.
Displacement
yes.
camps.
Yes. So they would, I mean, ACTED did some of the management, but I mean, BCF are by far now managing mm-hmm. most of the camps mm-hmm. in Erbil, and they are doing a brilliant job. A lot of volunteers, they have a lot of volunteers, and they're all local, so they speak the language. Most of them, they speak English as well, mm-hmm. so you can communicate with them easily.
So most of the internally displaced people who come, would they be speaking Arabic or Kurdish or other languages, other local languages?
I would say the majority of the displaced people speak Arabic,
mm-hmm.
but also we have people who speak Shebeki,
mm-hmm.
We have people that speak Kurdish, and of course different dialect of Kurdish,
right.
And some of them they speak Assyrian, the Christians mm-hmm. speak Assyrian as well, as long as, with Arabic. Arabic is the kind of the common language.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, right.
Everybody know Arabic, you know, except mm-hmm. the Kurds, even the Kurds, they know some Arabic, some of them, you know, like Arabic people know some Kurdish.
Interesting,
yes.
Interesting. So here you are working for an Anglican Christian charity, and you are a lightly veiled Muslim woman. How does all that work out? How do people treat you? And it has to be said, you're very young to be managing so many amazing operations. I mean, you're under 30 years old, and you're dealing in a very patriarchal society with heads of churches or heads of religious groups. How does that work out?
It's not too easy, but I mean, I worked my way through the love to gain the respect and the love that I have now, thankfully, for people. As a Muslim working for the Christian, I'm the only Muslim in my foundation. And it's amazing because, you know, Ken Andrew, he's an Anglican priest. He's very Christian. He's too Christian. But I mean, he is, and I'm too Muslim for him. But we are partners and we love each other. And we actually complement each other most of the time. Even in speaking engagement, I always would like him to be next to me because it will be fun. We have two different perspectives, but it's directly at the same point. So we believe the same things. We just believe in them different ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, right
mm-hmm.
and left. And it's just, it's exactly we have the same goal. And that's the main point. And because we always say, you know, when every time you get asked this question, you're a Muslim. It's weird, you know. And we say, okay, we are the foundation for relief and reconciliation in the
mm-hmm.
Middle East. So that's the reconciliation part. Here we go. We are the example of what we want to the
mm-hmm.
people, you know, lead by example. We are leading by example. And as for the head of the churches and the structure of the society that I come from, I mean, it's not easy. It's very hard. And I remember one of the instances, I don't know if I shared this or not with you, the head of the Syrian Orthodox Church, I remember I went to him at the beginning of the crisis, and he said, you're a Muslim, young woman, who come to me, a Christian bishop, saying, I want to help. What went wrong? He was honest. And I, until this moment, I respect him and I love his honesty because, you know, yeah, it is weird. And now after 2 years of a crisis in my relationship with him and his church, if it's a month or 2 weeks or a month passed by of me not contacting him or calling, he was like, okay. He would ring me and he's like, what's up? You know, what's happening? You didn't ask about us, you know? And it's just a friendly talks. It's not even relief or money or anything. Mm-hmm. No, it's just creating friendships and bonds. And, you know, and it's working. It's working like this now.
Tell me about some of the reconciliation activities that you do, because you're dealing with some very traumatized people there. It must be hard to even think about talking about reconciliation with these people. Some of them.
Yes. All the time people ask, so what's the solution? How we can combat ISIS? How can we get rid of ISIS? Or anybody that will come. Because if ISIS went, some other people will come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, worse than ISIS. And we always say, you know what? Reconciliation. Forgiving the other. Loving the enemy. And it's easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
In our reconciliation program, we get religious leadership together, sit together, people who hate each other mostly. And why we do that? Because in Iraq or in the Middle East, people are very sentimental toward their religious leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So they sometimes you see them following blindly. To the point that it doesn't even make sense that a human being would follow a human being like this. But it's just because people are very sentimental in their attachment to the religious figures, I would say. So whatever the religious the speech or the rhetoric that the religious leadership are using, the common people or the people, the followers, will just follow, you know, and accept the words as they are the word of God. You know, and what we are trying to focus on is change this rhetoric, change the way that they speak, kind of rearound it to be more into using more love language, forgiveness, not necessarily changing the other side to be like us, you know, oh, you're a Christian, you're a sinner. Or, oh, you're a Muslim, you're a terrorist, and you'll go to hell. No, not that. But just, you know what? I'll hear your story, you hear mine, and let's be friends. Not even friends, let's just tolerate each other, you know? And that we try, not only now, I try to implement this, even with the people that I work with on a lower level, not even the religious leadership, the highest level of religious or political leadership, no. Lower level, so with people. A lot of people come in the camps and it's like they are full with hate and anger and all these frustration that, you know, was during the last 2 years has been, you know, building because of the displacement, because they lost everything, because they are not getting proper food, not getting proper eat because of the environment that they're living at. So trying to kind of, you know what, let's chill. Forget what we are saying right now and let's reconcile, love each other. A lot of people laugh at you when you say that, you know. But if I affect one person, which I see happen, that's it for me. You know, oh my God, that's it. I've done it, you know, because it's a ripple effect. Hopefully if I affect this person or kids that I work with, you know, because kids that I work with, I see the most effect on them, you know, because they accept me if they are Christian or they are Jews. Or they are, well, no, there's no kids Jews, but I mean, if they're Shebek or Yazidis, they accept me, they love me. And I'm a Muslim, and I look like the people that, you know, destroyed their life. And because I see that there is hope. I feel that there is still hope of acceptance, of forgiveness, and of reconciliation.
So here in the United States, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about, oh, we've got to do more bombing or we've got to do more ground military activity. What kind of advice as an Iraqi peacemaker, can you give to lovers of peace in this country? I mean, should we support our country bombing ISIS? Or how can we deal with this phenomenon of ISIS, which is very scary?
At this moment, no, not at this moment, at all moments, I do not support war. I'm a pacifist, and I do not believe that in any situation, absolutely any situation, war was the solution. In history, and unfortunately, people do not learn from history, because you read and read and read, and all you see is that history is repeating itself. It's a circle, and nobody is breaking this circle because we are not learning. That's the problem. We're not learning from that, from the lessons that we had before. And I don't believe that any military intervention, external, will be able to solve what's happening right now in Iraq. There have been airstrikes and all kind of stuff that happened in the past 2 years or three, and I don't think they were of any, absolutely any value. They killed more civilians than ISIS. And the war created ISIS. The 2003 war. And all the militias and all the civil, you know, tension, the civil, I wouldn't say civil war, but the tension between all the different sects and school of
all
thought
the conflicts.
And all the conflict that happened in the region or inside Iraq created ISIS and contributed to it, you know. There's political factor, there's economical factor, there's the frustration that was created by poor governance and by poor government structure toward the Iraqi people that was, again, caused by the war. Before we had one Saddam Hussein, one dictator. Now we have like 100 that want to be him. So it is very, what it created ISIS is war. And if we brought more war to defeat ISIS, something worse than ISIS would come. So I feel that no, I am against any kind of intervention, absolutely any kind of intervention. People should rise to the occasion and kind of, and what they are doing that. The Iraqis are doing that, and ISIS is getting out of the way little by little. And even now, Anbar is a clean Anbar, like now, you know, one of the biggest provinces in Iraq, and it was you know, ISIS center after Sinjar and Nineveh. And there now it's empty. There's no ISIS except some in Fallujah, you know. And even now, like, there's airstrikes and bombing on Fallujah. It's destroying the city. All the people in Fallujah are coming for over there. 4,000 or 5,000 families now. We are expecting to come to Kurdistan because there is war now happening there. And what happens is there's bombing, mines, and airstrikes and weapon. And normal people who are, you know, living there, are getting affected. Even now in Nineveh, there is a war that is being planned to go to Nineveh and clear the city from ISIS. What is ISIS doing? They are using the people as their shield. Mm-hmm. The normal people who are innocent, who didn't, you know, who were forced to stay there because ISIS said, you know, go out, you'll be killed, you know? So I do not believe that war is the solution. My advice is that we all need to speak up. I don't think that protest is the solution. As well, but I believe that speaking up and letting people know, you know, holding conferences, effective ones, you know, always be present in the media. And I know it's very hard, it's not easy, writing and letting people know the details and letting people know what the implication of these wars are out of human experiences from there is very important.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
By the way, if you want to learn more about ISP, the amazing tutoring program that back in 2009-2010 helped Dr. Sarah develop her skills as a critical thinker, her intellectual self-confidence, and her commitment to helping others, you should look for the memoir that Teresa Kubisak and Gabe Huck
wrote about the years they spent in Damascus establishing and running the program. Their memoir was published by our friends at Just World Books earlier this year. It's called Never Can I Write of Damascus, When Syria Became Our Home. That's all for now from the Just World podcast series. Check back regularly to learn about future episodes, or visit our website, www.justworldeducational.org, to see all the other resources we're sharing there to help build a just and peaceful world.